Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Things first, I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. Guys, I'm in a great mood today. Great mood. I just want to let you know, so do not bring me down. We have 3 hours together. It's going to be a lot of fun. What?
Put that on the board in the office. I'm in a great mood, so do not bring me down. I don't know about you suckers, but today's my last day of work this week. About to go on a little vacay. So let's have a good day, you sons of guns.
Not what I said.
Don't y'all screw it up for me.
Love you guys.
Okay.
We have a great show on this Thursday morning. Kevin Durant trying to prove he's the best in the world. This amid speculation that he and Kawhi could pair up in Brooklyn this summer. What am I missing behind me?
Nothing.
But we start with Durant's Warriors heading to Houston. All eyes will be on James Harden's eyes, pun totally intended. The beard suffered a lacerated eyelid in game two on Tuesday. Bad news for Houston. They're down 0-2 in this series. Good news for Houston. Well, they expect Harden's vision to be fully clear by Saturday, as tests revealed no cornea damage. All right, CC, I'll start with you. What do the Rockets have to do to get back into this series now?
Well, there's a number of things that they have to do. The one thing I love about playoff basketball in the NBA is you have huge swings typically from game one to two, but none greater than from game two to game three. Typically, well, because you have the higher seed, they have the momentum, they're a better team. But when you go back and you give that team a couple games to be able to adjust, I expect the Rockets to be able to adjust. I expect them to shoot the basketball better. Also, I expect them from on the defensive end, because they've been defending the Warriors good, but they're not finishing the possession. Yep. Coaches always tell you, finish the possession. And from a defensive standpoint, when you have finished the possession is not when you contest the shot, not when you help someone else. Now out, no. It's when you secure the rebound. And the Warriors dominated the offensive glass in game number two. Huge difference in the game. You can't give this type of Warriors team all those second chance points. And take care of the basketball. Be more careful with the basketball, 18 turnovers in game number two. If they were able to get better in those two areas, that's the way the Rockets are able to get back in this series and get their first win against the Warriors.
You said finish the possession. I'm going to add one other note to it. How about start the possession defensively? Five times in this game two, the Rockets scored and the Warriors got a transition layup.
Oh, yeah, very surprising,
which is just inexcusable. To not get back on defense after a make in a game of that magnitude, just inexcusable. So those, if they'd have done any of those three things better in game number two, they could have won. If they would have done two of those three things better, they would have won. If they'd have done all three things better, they'd have won easily, which is not kick the ball around the court as far as turnovers go in the first quarter in particular, offensive rebound in the first quarter in particular, and get back on defense after makes. It was Alphonso McKinney, Andre Iguodala getting dunks after a Harden layup, after when Harden was attacking. So I think what happened in that regard was the Rockets are so used to shooting threes, Harden shooting threes, that when Harden goes to the bucket, when the possession ends at the bucket, the guy who's usually the first man back in Harden.
Yeah, your point guard.
He's 98 feet from his opposing rim. Other guys got to get back. But here's where the Rockets are at. They've got to be, even though they're down 0-2, thrilled with how they're defending Steph and Klay. Steph is 11 of 28 in this series, 6 of 23 from 3. Klay is 13 of 31 in this series, 5 of 14 from 3. Durant's scoring at a high volume, but he's doing it around 42%, 43% from the field. The Rockets will deal with that. It is the things Chris mentioned and the fact that the Rockets haven't gotten the contributions they need from the others, from the people not named James Harden, to steal one of these two games. You said game three can be the most interesting game. It also can end the series. Because if you fall down 0-3, mm-hmm. no one in NBA history has come back from down 0-3, and you're certainly not going to come back from down 0-3 against the two-time defending champs.
One of the things you've been talking about is getting CP3, getting Chris Paul back into it. We want more from him, not just 15 points, 20, maybe even 25, maybe even 30. What does D'Antoni do now back in Houston to get not only him but also Capella back involved?
Yeah, I think that Chris Paul, I think that they'll have a certain game plan for him. But, man, what you see in these playoffs is the guys that are going to come out and be aggressive. Game number one, what do we have in Philadelphia? Man, the Jimmy Butler disappearance. Game number two, Jimmy Butler, they ran some sets for him. And these guys that have all this experience, you expect them to be more aggressive. Chris Paul's whole resume depends on him trying to get a championship. It would top off a guy that's had a great career.
He's got everything else you could want.
So I expect him to get double digits in shots. I expect him to continue to defend at a high end, to build help Harden, build take some of that burden on the offensive end. And Capella, now listen, Nick, I didn't think that they should sign him to the type of contract, but for the type of money that he is making, he's got to be a difference maker. If the Warriors are going to play the Hampton Five, you have to be able to pound it into him, and not only not to just to shoot it, but sometimes throw it into him so he can kick it back out for another open. Now, I know a lot of people would be like, man, I watched the game, and the Warriors forced a lot of turnovers because they knew they were trying to go to Capella. They could read. They were reading the lobs, and they played them well. So in game number three, you know, the number one thing that I want to see is these role players, Chris Paul and Capella, what is the coaching staff going to do to engage them to get them more involved in the offense?
There's something important I want to say about Chris Paul. For that, though, let's stay on the Capella point for a second. What do you think about them putting Austin Rivers in the starting lineup and going small versus small, saying your Hamptons five is killing us? We thought we had an edge with Capella against it. Clearly you don't. This is desperation time. Rivers has been the best reserve, mm-hmm. and just saying, hey, we'll go even smaller against your small people. We'll have P.J. Tucker as our center, essentially. Do you think that's something we might see Saturday night?
This NBA is such a game of matchups, and they do so much switching. So many offensive sets are predicated on we're going to keep picking until we get the guy that we want to go one-on-one with. Yeah. And you would think there would be no NBA player or executive would say, you know something, you need to put Austin Rivers in and you'll be better defensively than having Capella. But with the matchups,
it might be the case.
It might be the case. That might be the move that changes this series.
It could be
Nick.
The wrinkles where Capella's only on the court when Kayvon Looney's on the court or if Bogut gets in the rotation, where they only gets in there when they have a true center out there for Golden State. But on Chris Paul, Chris Paul has always believed he's better than Steph. He has created a rivalry there, even though Steph has clearly ascended well past Chris Paul. Chris Paul won't believe it, won't accept it. Chris Paul has been building towards these two postseason series, last year against the Warriors, this year against the Warriors. Last year, he was not able to close it out. If he was healthy, I think the Rockets would have closed it out. We'd be talking about Chris Paul differently. We'd be talking about him as a champion, assuming they would have gone on to beat LeBron and the Cavs. Chris Paul needs to have a 30-point game doesn't exist for him. I looked it up this morning. He cracked 30 once all year. One time all year did Chris Paul crack 30. Only five times all year did he even score 25. But you can go. He can do what he did against Utah 2 weeks ago, 23, 8, 7, 2 blocks, 5 steals, imprint all over the game. Mm-hmm. Final game of the regular season. The Rockets end up losing at the buzzer, but was important for seeding. 24, 8, and 6 in a matchup against Russ. Chris Paul has it in him to be great defensively, be efficient offensively, and to make an impact on the game like that. He's not going to give you 35. He hasn't at any point all year. But you need one of those 24 points, 7 rebounds, 9 assists, a few steals, knock Steph to the ground a few times performances if the Rockets are going to get this series back to, or get it to 2-1.
There's a number of adjustments that have to be made. Chris Paul's going to have his imprint on the game, on all facets of the game. But for the Warriors, with Draymond playing the way that he's playing, Draymond averaged 7 points during the regular season, averaging 12, 8, and 7 during the postseason, playing with the type of energy that made him an all-star, all-defensive team, why he was a candidate for defensive player of the year. But the most valuable player right now, I said, with all the Warriors, is Andre Iguodala. what he is doing, shooting 41% on open threes. People were giving him shots, daring him to be able to shoot. And when he's guarding Harden, which he is a lot, Harden shooting less than 28%. Iggy has found the fountain of youth from some type of, I don't know where he got it, where he drank it. It was in a powder form, Jenna, because I know Jenna has an interest in that. But when you when you have the type of impact that he's had on the game, 19 dunks, Nick.
And see, remember,
leading the NBA in the playoffs?
Last year, when the Rockets went from down 2-1 to up 3-2, Andre Iguodala was not playing. Andre Iguodala was injured. And so that was a factor that the Rockets didn't have to deal with, a fully functional. In fact, he missed some games in that series. Andre Iguodala last year, he has been an enormous factor in the series this year.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, more on my interest in powdered drinks. Also, has Kevin Durant proven he's the best in the world? That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Welcome back. We'll get to Kevin Durant in just a second. But first, Barcelona versus Liverpool. Messi, free kick, and somehow bends it around the wall to score top corner.
This is amazing right here. He almost takes off the guy in the wall's right ear, all right? And he puts it in. This is unblockable.
And it's his 600th goal on the 14-year anniversary of when he joined Barcelona. 600th career goal. Unbelievable.
Ronaldo, I think, had his 600 last week.
Yes, sir.
Good stuff, guys.
Good job.
All right, so last night's NBA
That was LeBron's team. LeBron's only part of that team.
Nuggets, Blazers.
Every team LeBron gets with, they go downhill. The team was a champion. LeBron bought a minority stake in them.
And the team Messi was playing, Liverpool, not Barcelona, not the team he plays for. I got you, C. That's why they're going downhill. That's why they lost. That's what you meant.
This highlight you've now seen 16 times. Malik Beasley flying in for the emphatic dunk over Al-Farouq Aminu.
Tough night for the Nuggets, man. Aside from dunks, they couldn't hit anything. If they were more than 5 feet from the basket, they weren't hitting the shots. That's why they lost. Blazers able to steal home court.
There was an NBA game last night? I thought the NBA was off.
No, there was a game last night.
I was watching the game. That wasn't the NBA. I thought that was a preseason.
No.
That was a playoff.
Oh, it's your guy, C. Nikola Jokic passing the ball through Aminu's legs to set up Paul Millsap.
It's one of the only things that went right all night for them. Jokic with a great little pass right here, though.
He had a bunch of outstanding passes. I'd like for an alleged superstar to take more than one shot in the first quarter, but, you know, I guess you're not always going to
get
that.
There you go. Now you're back spicy. Same intensity.
You got to get one little dude.
I gave him credit when he played great.
And you took
it right back. Can I say, listen, if you're a superstar, can't be having these little low teens performances, home playoff games.
What about Dame? He was off yesterday.
They won, man. They were on the road,
too. We are going to talk about his struggles last night. Moving on to Kevin Durant, though. The reigning two-time finals MVP is having himself quite the postseason, averaging 34 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists through 8 games. And boy, he's enjoying every last second of it. Durant says, quote, "This is where this expletive is fun. This is when it's serious, and I'm just embracing it. I'm just having so much fun right now. This time of year is what I'm geared for. I'm just hooping at a high level and enjoying the competitiveness of the playoffs. You go through such a long season to get to this point, and now it's time to produce." Chris Carter, is Durant proving that he is indeed the best player in the NBA with the way he's been playing this postseason?
Well, he is playing at a level that would rival any level that he's played at. I would say it's the best level that he's played at. But when you play with the Warriors, he's developed a lot of his basketball game. But how can we compare it when they have such amazing spacing? Like, you cannot double team him at any time. And if he decides to drive to the rim because of the other players, I mean, he can get all the way to the hole the way defenses have to. So I got to say this. Kevin Durant is playing the best basketball I have seen him play. I believe there's not a better player playing the basketball in the world than him. You can say it's unfair to LeBron because he's not in the playoffs, because you can only determine the best players because typically they're all in the playoffs.
Yep.
I don't see a player in Harden, in Giannis, in anyone else, Dame, anyone else playing at a high level in this play that is better than him. Kawhi, would be the person that maybe would be able to be, pose the best argument, because on the defensive end, what Kawhi can do. But right now, if we were having a worldwide draft, Kevin Durant would be my first selection as far as the guy that I'm going to take, regardless of what age they are, to be able to move on if I had one selection.
I do believe Kevin Durant's playing better than anyone right now. But to the point C was alluding to in the beginning, if you're going to do an experiment, if you're going to try to test out any hypothesis, you need a set of conditions that is equal across all of your test subjects.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say.
Correct. That what you're saying is, when someone goes and plays the Rockets, their entire game plan is built around stopping Harden. They will trap Harden. They will double team Harden. They will force the ball out of his hands. When someone goes and plays the Bucks, they will build a wall at the rim and say, anyone but Giannis beat us. When the Sixers are playing the Raptors, their game plan is built around finding a way to slow down Kawhi Leonard. The Rockets not only are not building a game plan around stopping Kevin Durant, much like the Clippers in the previous series, they refuse to double team him because Steph Curry is there and Klay Thompson is there. I also don't want to be too prisoner of the moment-y. 2 weeks ago, the discussion was, man, Steph Curry once again reminding us he's the most underrated player in the league, the best player on his team, when he opened the playoffs with a 38-15-7. The following game, when Kevin Durant had more turnovers than field goal attempts and Steph threw up a 29-6, the conversation once again was, how can you be the best player in the league when you won't take over games? Now, since then, Durant has played at the highest level I've ever seen him play. His team has only lost one game. He's been extraordinary. But the reason, one of the reasons, that I'm so confident Kevin Durant is leaving Golden State is because he justifiably feels like he deserves this crown unencumbered. And it's impossible to win it in Golden State without a yeah, but, without a okay, but when the other team is more worried about Steph from 30 than you from 18, how hard is your job compared to what Giannis and Harden have to do? So that's the problem when you have two guys in the discussion who are on the same team.
Yeah, I can understand the people that would have that argument. But in the last 2 years, in the playoffs and in the finals, the only thing that has stopped us from saying Kevin Durant is not the best player, it wasn't just because LeBron James is LeBron James. It's because how LeBron played in the playoffs.
Yep.
So now with LeBron not being in the playoffs, we have to be able to evaluate the teams that are in the playoffs. And of the teams in the playoffs, Kevin Durant, he has earned that respect by how he has dominated the game in the fashion, the limited number of shots, how he gets to the free throw line, what he's doing on the defensive end. To me, it's the most special performance that we've seen in the playoffs.
LeBron James did the thing that Kevin Durant hasn't done yet. He went and he won with a team of virtually no superstars.
He won with Kyrie.
He won with Kyrie, but he got to the finals. So he got to the finals with no one else really on the team, which is what KD hasn't done. Is there anything at this point that the Warriors can do, success or otherwise, if they make it to the finals, if they win, if not, that will change his course right now? Or do you think he's all but a lock to leave?
I think this has been essentially set, I don't want to say in stone, but set into motion over the course of the last year. And I think his coach knows it. I think his teammates know it. I think the league knows it. And I think that's one of the reasons why maybe he can play with such freedom ever since he dealt with a little bit of controversy after game two of the Clippers series. And since then, he has played not just better, but with more authority than I have seen Kevin Durant play really at any time in his tenure with the Golden State Warriors. And I do think what Steve Kerr said the other day is correct, which is, if everyone playing right now, Kevin Durant is the most skilled. Steve Kerr was very careful with how he said it. He didn't say Kevin Durant's the best basketball player because he's got to juggle the egos.
And he didn't say the best offensive player.
He said he's the most skilled player in the league right now. And let's just take LeBron out of it because he's not playing, to your point. I do think Kevin Durant can do more things on the court than anyone playing in the playoffs. I do think Kevin Durant is the guy that can fit into any system imaginable and be a great, great player. But when we judge guys in the playoffs, partially because defense in the playoffs gets so much harder, partially because teams have 2 weeks to scheme around stopping you in the playoffs.
Yep. And it's only the best teams.
Right. And we know how great Steph was. But before KD got there, we saw Steph get marginalized to a degree in the NBA Finals when a team's entire game plan was about slowing him down. With if Steph wasn't there, forget the fact the Warriors have won championships, then KD would have the opportunity. If he's playing at this level with no Steph, then it wouldn't even be a question.
Sure.
Right? Then it would be obvious. The only reason it's not obvious is because it's like, yeah, but they're still never sending doubles at you. They're still, and that's not KD's fault. I'm not holding that against him, but you have to include it in your analysis of him versus Harden or Giannis or Kawhi.
I believe we're going to determine the best basketball player in the world, and I believe it's going to be Kevin Durant at the end of this playoffs. We can say we're not going to give it to him because he's on the Warriors, but I think with their lack of a bench and the way they're playing basketball now, with Boogie being out, it's not as if there's an equal playing field, but the other teams have a better shot at beating them. And I think Kevin Durant, as we get through this playoff, he's going to continue to send the message because after game number two, he has changed the narrative and what people were saying.
I'm really interested, assuming the Warriors get to the finals, if we have Durant versus Giannis or Durant versus Kawhi, if there is a similar situation where the Warriors win, where even if Durant wins MVP, if Kawhi averages, does what he's been doing throughout the whole playoffs for a Raptors team that loses in six, I do think some people will come out of that saying, okay, yeah, but if you flip-flopped them, if you took KD and put him on the Raptors and Kawhi and put him on the Warriors, guess what? The Warriors are still champions. That's what makes this specific circumstance so difficult to evaluate.
All right, we've got to take a break. We touched on where KD might go next year. Coming up, will Durant and Kawhi Leonard pair up in
those two guys.
Brooklyn this summer? That's next up.
Then we're going to have the same damn problem, Jenna.
Same damn problem, just the opposite.
How are we going to evaluate them?
Life's- This weekend, the Monster Energy Cup Series heads to Dover. Catch the action Sunday, 2 Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. All right, time for us to go viral. Washington drafted Dwayne Haskins to be their next franchise quarterback. He's already getting support from a former Washington star, with Joe Theismann giving Haskins the nod to wear the famous number 7, which hasn't been worn since Theismann wore it back in 1985.
So this number was not officially retired. I guess Washington's only ever retired Sammy Baugh's jersey, but it was protected. So, like, we're not retiring it, but no one's going to wear it unless, evidently, you think you have the next franchise quarterback. I think it was nice of Joe Theismann. I don't know. I think Washington might have done this for Haskins anyway.
I mean, I can go through a bunch of names of the great Washington players before I get to Joe Theismann. I was shocked at whatever they was doing. They had his jersey in preserve, mothballs, or whatever. Right now with Joe Theismann, what he should be doing is like, oh, of course you can wear it. Start selling them. Get his name back out there. Absolutely.
He did the right thing. He let the
Did he have a choice?
Go. Well, sometimes you do the right thing, whether what the incentives are, who knows. But he did the right thing. He let the whole world know, no problem, young man, go wear my jersey.
He didn't. It's not his jersey.
Well, it was.
It's what?
Last worn by him. It's been 34 years. No one's worn it. So now Dwayne Haskins is going to get
it. Like, he's not even one of the greatest quarterbacks that ever played in Washington. Like, what are we talking about here? Like, is it a sympathy thing? Like, because he got his leg broke or something?
There's probably an element of that.
Got an issue. Get him a tissue.
I opened that door.
Let that jersey go.
Ran through it.
I mean, that
was delightful. I'm so glad.
Stories to start your morning. Blazers Nuggets. Game 2. Damian Lillard had an off night, finishing with just 14 points, but the Blazers still got the win 97-90 to even up this series with Denver. See, how impressive were the Blazers? Was the Blazers' win with Dame having a slow night?
Oh, absolutely. If you look at the stat line, him and CJ, that they're going to struggle on the road. But I like their whole approach. Dame talked about it after game number 1. He felt as if his teammates were complaining about the referees, got into a back and forth in game number 1. And they did not play well in this game, but they were able to hold on. Denver made a couple runs at them late to Bill try to get back into the game. But Bill, to steal a game on the road, yep, when you don't play well, you don't find that in the playoff. Huge win, mature win by this Trailblazer team.
Speaking of mothballs, the Knicks mothballed Enes Kanter the beginning of this year. He then got a lifeline from Portland.
Yes.
I've been hard on Kanter as far as how bad of a defensive player he'd been historically.
Yeah, take your time.
He's
now
been really good in this series against a really skilled big in Nikola Jokic. Kanter being a legitimate replacement for Nurkic is not something I think anyone saw coming.
No.
But he's been so key to what they're doing. Last night, Denver could not hit a shot, and Jokic couldn't bail him out. And so this was a great win for Portland where they didn't play great.
Guaranteed, most publications didn't cover this. When the Knicks decided to let him go, Portland decides to get him. One of the biggest pickups this offseason. You're looking at a
mid-season.
You're talking about a Portland Trailblazers team that could be in the finals, and they wouldn't be there without him.
Right.
Moving on to the Bucks-Celtics series.
I like that. You're apologizing. Let's
start
here.
I'm not apologizing.
Celtics, come on. Get it ready.
Boston has challenged Giannis in the form of physical play, and the Greek Freak has noticed. Giannis says the Celtics definitely play to the limits of flagrant fouling. Nick, good strategy to be physical with Giannis?
Only strategy. Got to do it. And this is – there is a LeBron-ass effect of this, which is I don't think they're fouling him harder to, you know, to be mean, to be intimidating. It's because you got no other choice. He's so big, and he has developed such strength that if you do not wrap both arms around him, he will get an and one. The foul is to prevent the bucket, so you have to make sure you prevent the bucket. So I think Boston has had a really smart defensive game plan against Giannis. I don't think it's dirty. I don't think it's out of bounds. It's playoff basketball against a dominant player.
No, it's not dirty, but they're going to put some meat on him.
Yeah.
They are going to challenge him at the rim, and they are going to push it as far as they can. If you're going to slow down someone like Giannis, who is going to make his living in the lane, if Giannis doesn't want that physical contact, you need to keep developing your outside shot. And that's the reason. If you're going to slow Giannis down, you have to be physical with him. That's why the Celtics are in this series tied up 1-1.
And look at these highlights. Look at what happens when they aren't hitting him. He's finishing at the rim. You got to knock him down, man.
All right, moving on to the Warriors now. Draymond Green's contract status has flown under the radar, but Golden State's owner, Joe Lacob, has strong feelings on the three-time champ, saying, I want Draymond Green to be here forever. Nick, how crucial is it for the Warriors to lock him up long-term?
Draymond came up with the term 82-game players and 16-game players. Draymond is proving once again like he did.
Yeah, I don't think he came up with that one. I heard that one before. I think.
Okay, well, he popularized it, at least in recent memory.
At some point, he said it.
He proved it with a 30-point.
With his mouth open.
With a 30-point triple-double in Game 7 of the finals a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Has proven it consistently during this run. He's their glue guy. He's point forward. Mm-hmm. He is their best rim protector, and he will be critical to their ability to play high-level defense once Kevin Durant leaves. Now, he has more value to them than he has maybe any other team in the league, so it could be prickly contract negotiations. But, yeah, they got to keep Draymond.
Yeah, four-time champion Draymond. But he said this about all the stars there. He said that about KD, like to keep him there. But all the people, he's like, Steph's going to stay here. Klay's going to stay here. Iggy is going to stay here, and Draymond's going to stay here. Those four guys are the cornerstone of their franchise. I expect him to be a Golden State Warrior.
You just already given him this year's championship? We got a month left. Let's just see what happens. Not a four-time champion yet. I mean, probably is about to be, but not yet.
Let's end with Ben Roethlisberger, talk some football.
If you could make some of the predictions, you can. I'm sure that would
be I'm with that. I'm all for CC predictions. New segment. CC makes a prediction.
The 37-year-old quarterback, Roethlisberger, has long been linked to retirement, mainly because he keeps hinting at retirement. But now that he signed a 2-year extension, keeping him in Pittsburgh through 2021, Steelers general manager Kevin Colbert says there's no end in sight. He says, I'm sure that he doesn't have an expiration date. I know that he's still very competitive. He still wants to do this at a high level. What he wants is more Super Bowls, and he wants to continue to try to win, and we're going to support that. See, what is the Steelers Super Bowl window with Ben Roethlisberger there in Pittsburgh?
I still think they have it, a Super Bowl window. I believe their defense will be drastically improved. I believe their style of play, they will adapt to their personnel, where they will not be a team that can drop back and throw the ball 40 times a game. That used to be one of their strengths with Antonio. So I expect for them to try to manage the game, try to be physical, special teams and defense, get the game, make the game close, and late in the game, you have one of those type of quarterbacks that can make the difference in the game. So as long as Mike Tomlin is there, as Coach Mangini says, and as long as Ben Roethlisberger, and I think that Ben, he went through that thing in your career where you're wondering, man, how long am I going to play? But when you look at all the other quarterbacks and what they're doing, forget we even had Tom Brady.
Right.
Tom Brady's in a space all by himself, all right? Because the way he's eating, the way he's doing, and how long he wants to play, you got Drew Brees, you got Phillip Rivers, you got Eli Manning, you got all these guys that have been like, man, I'm just as good as athlete as them. and Ben has continued to play at a high level. Some of these quarterbacks, the one here in town, is not even playing at a high level, and they think he can play three more years. So why couldn't Phillip Rivers? Why wouldn't Ben Roethlisberger? What else are they going to do as far as a second career? So Ben Roethlisberger, not surprised at all if he was to play three more years.
What about the team he's surrounded with? How big of a drop-off is there this year having lost their two guys, their Big Bell and Antonio Brown?
Well, you got to keep in mind, since they didn't have Le'Veon Bell all of last season, that was kind of already baked in. Now, knowing Antonio Brown, that offense going to take a haircut now. The offense will, in my mind, not be as potent, but it should be noted, what has hurt the Steelers, the reason the Steelers have not reached what we judge as their potential over the last few years, has not been because the offense hasn't been good enough. It's been because the defense, which they year after year invest their first-round pick in, the defense has not played to the level that it should. They've got five first-round picks on defense. They traded a pick for Joe Hayden, who was a former first-round pick himself. They have Stephon Tuitt was a high second-round pick. This year, once again, what do they do? Oh, Devin Bush, first-round pick. They keep trying to build that defense up the right way through the draft. That defense has to play better. When they lost the playoff game, that really, I think, the most disappointing loss of this era, the divisional round game against the Jacksonville Jaguars after a bye at home, the game that would have set up the rematch with New England, they scored 40-some points and lost to the Blake Bortles-led Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, the defense scored for Jacksonville, so that added to their total. But what they have been searching for the last year and a half is a replacement for Ryan Shazier and a way to play high-level defense without him. Maybe Devin Bush, plus T.J. Watt being a year older, plus Cam Hayward's continued leadership, Terrell Edmonds, a guy they spent the first-round pick on last year.
But on paper, it sounds like a great
defense.
They
added Mark Barron this offseason. They don't have to be a great defense, but they've got to be a well above average defense. To me, that's the real question for the Steelers, more so than can an offense with Ben Roethlisberger be productive?
They might have the third or fourth best defense in the division. All right? I believe Cleveland's defense will be better, and there's no question Baltimore's defense is better, being one of the elite ones. But at the end of the day, offensively, what are they going to do? Who are going to be the wide receivers that emerge? Do they get their tight ends involved? Because they do have some skilled tight ends. So I believe how they do business will be a little bit different, but they adapted last year because James Conner is a quality running back. And the reason why he takes a hit is because he's replacing one of the best running backs all-purpose that we've ever seen. I think that people miss out on how good Le'Veon Bell was. James Conner is a good football player, and football is a team sport. So I just believe they're going to have a number of people. They signed Dante Moncrief. I don't expect him to do anything. I have huge question marks as far as their wide receivers and who's going to produce some of those numbers. Juju, what number receiver is he? Is he a number two? Because I don't believe at this point in his career he's a number one.
And James Washington, a guy last year they drafted in the second round. I think they were pretty unhappy with his development, even just in his rookie season. Mm-hmm. The Steelers have a great history of spending non-first-round picks on wide receivers and turning them into guys that would have been worth a first-round pick. James Washington was drafted high at that position by Steelers standards. With Antonio out the door, with Juju assuming the number one receiver role, whether he's ready for it or not, James Washington, big time for him to potentially step up to that number two wide receiver.
Yeah, the general manager and their coaching staff's done a great job as far as developing these low-value wide receivers. But they've done an awful job developing high picks on the defensive side.
Yep.
And that's the reason why Pittsburgh, if they can get their defense up to being a top 10 defense, then yes, that championship window will continue to be open.
All right, let's get back to the NBA now. Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, both trying to win their current team a title. But the conversation is now shifting to where the two pending free agents will play next season. Well, according to reports, KD and Kawhi will consider the Brooklyn Nets as a possible landing spot. Nick, would Durant and Kawhi be a more dominant tandem than Durant and Steph Curry, or does it depend on where you're playing and what system you're playing in?
No, I don't think it really depends on where you're playing, and I think the system would meld to those two players' talents. But this is not a knock on Kawhi Leonard at all, because Kawhi Leonard is in the conversation for best player alive right now. But no, I don't think it would be a better tandem than the one they have in Golden State, because for a very simple reason, two reasons actually. One is the gravity Steph has on the defense and the spacing that he demands, that he forces upon the defense, unlike any player in league history. And the other reason is if you're going to have two stars that are wing players, you need one of them, ideally. You don't have to have it, because they would become the best tandem in the league, by the way. They because you wouldn't have KD and Steph anymore, so it'd be great. But you need one of those players, ideally, to be an elite playmaker. We know the only part of Kawhi Leonard's game that isn't an A-plus at this point is the playmaking. I think his career high in assists for a game is 8. Like, so that's never been a part of his game. And Durant is a good passer for his size, a good passer for his position. But the elite playmaker on the Warriors is Steph. And next, after that, it's Draymond. And then you would drop down to KD. So when you had LeBron and Wade together, LeBron was the elite playmaker. LeBron and Kyrie. LeBron, once again, the elite playmaker. For KD and Kawhi, they would become the best duo in basketball. I'm not questioning that at all. They'd have two top five guys. But would they be better than KD and Steph? To me, they would not.
Well, I would take that. I would pose this question to you. Because the playmaking, to me, I believe is a little overrated. Because if I can score the basketball, I am a playmaker. Now, I don't see too many guys in the league that are getting shots for other guys. Steph passes the ball to go get the ball. Steph is careless with the basketball. So his overall ball handling or playmaking is not greater than KD's ability to defend and Kawhi's ability to defend. So for me, what if these guys aren't shooting well? What am I going to fall back on? Well, we're going to be good defensively because of our overall length. KD can defend the rim, and both of them have proven they can defend on the perimeter. So it's just a matter of what you like. If you think playmaking's more valuable, then you can take Steph. If it's me, I'm taking the bigger guys who also on the defensive end, because it's going to allow other people are going, what the Golden State Warriors are doing now, it's not offensively they're having the problem. They're shutting Houston down defensively because their best players have decided we're going to play defense. And when you always have that type of attitude, it's easier to get number 3, number 4, and number 5 because your superstars are so good at playing defense for them to buy in and to be a really good defensive team.
Would you agree with that, that defensively they make far more of an impact than KD and Steph would?
Listen,
and
so
how important is that when you're judging the two?
So KD's the commonality within
right.
The two. So the question is, who's a better defensive player, Kawhi Leonard?
No, that's not a question.
Or Steph Curry, and that is, Kawhi Leonard.
But how important is that when you factor
in? I think it's very important. To me, it doesn't trump the spacing and shooting Steph adds, and Kawhi's an excellent shooter, but Kawhi's shooting his threes from right up against the three-point line, which there's nothing wrong with, but Steph, you have to guard from 35 feet, and the playmaking element. But there's one other element to it. If KD and Kawhi were to play together, KD has to be the voice of that team. Something that KD has, we've seen recently, not really embraced or been comfortable with because Kawhi is so reserved. Steph is the voice of the Warriors, the calming influence on the Warriors. I think that has helped KD out enormously.
I think Kawhi, it's something that people don't know. Kawhi talks on the basketball court.
He talks
around the guys. Toronto, he's running Toronto, all right? Now, he don't get a lot of fanfare. You see him after the last game they won. They asked him one question quietly. Do you want more? No, I'm done.
Yeah, that was
fun. Okay, so
Kawhi
has already, when he made that move and left San Antonio, he took the leadership and everything that Pop took with him. Now, he's not going to get credit, but he has Toronto playing great basketball, and they had a great regular season. I believe that KD, when he decides to leave, that he is going to pick up some of that responsibility of, I have to be the voice. I have to do some different things. So to not give him credit when he hadn't necessarily had to be in, he had Russ, and then he joined Golden State.
And I want to be, it's just so people understand what I was saying about Kawhi, I was not at all talking about being vocal or a leader on the court. I'm talking about in the post game when he has to, somebody is the guy that always has to answer when the team's in a rough spot, when something bad happens. For the Warriors, that's
Kawhi's always going to never be in that spot, though, because
right.
He's never going to allow people to change him.
Agreed. That's my exact point, is that so it would have to be Kevin Durant. He hasn't had that responsibility in Golden State.
No, remember, he had the back game and he didn't even show up for the post-game.
Right, it's always been Steph. So
right.
That I was only talking about off the court as far as dealing with the negative parts of being the superstar. if you play with Kawhi Leonard, you're going to have to be the off-the-court voice of the team, because that's something Kawhi's just never been interested in. And by the way, it's worked out really well for him, not being interested in.
All right, right now he's doing great for the Warriors. On the other side, we'll talk about the Rockets. Their playoff run, is it all but over? Ahead on First Things First. We are back here on First Things First, joined by NBA champion Antoine Walker.
What's up, my friend? Good to see you. Man, we were going over our NBA talent with our bosses and everything. Nick's got your rating, man, way up there. You know he's got a list for everything.
Yeah.
But it's I appreciate that. No. I need that.
He's two handshakes.
Yeah, listen, I'm going to be honest. I'm not going to lie to the man. Chris Broussard's my permanent number one pick. But after
how can you be permanent, man? Nothing in life is permanent.
Well,
but tell him why, because your takes are hot.
He's getting great at it. He's got great. And they come out of nowhere. He's mild mannered, like, by the way, I'm letting you know this guy. Whoa.
It's great. Anyway.
Chris been in business longer than me, that's all.
Exactly right.
All right, Tuan, the Blazers-Nuggets series continued last night. Damian Lillard coming off a 39-point game one. Came back down to earth in game two. 14 points, but his teammates had his back. C.J. McCollum had a game-high 20 to go along with 6 rebounds. Blazers win 97-90. They even the series up at 1. Game 3 in Portland on Friday. All right, Antoine, how impressive were the Blazers' win with Lillard being held to just 14 points last night?
It was very impressive. I was actually shocked. I didn't think they could play this way and win a game. They were very good defensively, very stingy, holding them to 35 points in the first half. Yep. And then you think about the backcourt. I thought they only could win with Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum having big nights, or at least one of them having a big night. And
100%.
Neither one of those guys had huge nights. C.J. McCollum made some big buckets in the fourth quarter, but Dame Lillard was kind of non-existent throughout this whole game. They guarded him really, really well. But impressive performance by the whole team. They got 6 guys in double figures. And Rodney Hood, that's 2 games back-to-back where he's played really, really good.
Yes.
And now they seem like they got another, I would say, a third to fourth score, because Enes Kanter is scoring the ball a little bit more than we expected.
And Rodney Hood, his production has really surprised me, because I watched him in the playoffs last year just look like a deer in the headlights with the Cavs. And so Rodney Hood stepping up and being a legitimate bench option. And I have to give credit to Enes Kanter.
Yes.
Because Enes Kanter, I thought, was going to be the weak link in the previous series for Portland against OKC. I thought they'd be able to pick and roll him off the court. It didn't happen. Mm-hmm.
He's
gotten a lot better. He was arguably the worst post defender in basketball. That's why a guy who can give you, if you give him enough minutes, 20 points and 10 rebounds, was not a regular starter in this league. And so I thought OKC would hurt him. Even though I'm not as high on Jokic as most are, I knew Jokic would destroy him. Jokic is so skilled as far as he would be able to manipulate Kanter. Kanter's more than held his own.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can win a game where Dame goes 5 of 17, where Dame only hits 1-3. Portland can win a game defensively as they did last night. Now, Denver missed a lot of open threes. I understand that. But Denver made 6 threes, which is terrible. Portland only hit 9. And Portland was in control the entire game. They trailed 7-3 early. And basically from that moment forward, they led the rest of the way.
One thing I got to give Dame credit, because it's really hard to do this. And I watch you play it, man. You go 0-10, and the next 3, he still believed that they're going in.
Yeah.
Dame last night, he managed how much he was going to shoot. He didn't shoot him out the game, because he didn't have his best game. But with 17 attempts, I mean, he could have shot the ball at least 10 more times to try to force it at the end to try to get hot. So you have to be able to give him credit, because if he doesn't take that backseat and allow these role players to build, because they were playing a lot better. But the most important point is Kanter. And it happened in February when the Knicks decided to release him. Several days later, Portland signs him. You don't know what the future is. But now your center gets hurt with a devastating injury in Nurkic. And now you have a perfect replacement. A guy that's got experience. A guy that offensively will give you that other score in case they're having that bad night. Because last night, for a long period, he was the best player on the court. I mean, he has given them a lift, especially on the offensive end, and has drastically improved on the defensive end. So right now, Portland's not in the position if they don't make that, they don't sign him in February.
And it was even more impressive because you think about the series they come off with OKC, emotional series. Obviously, Dame took that series very personal.
Yes.
Game one, he still was on fire, getting 39 points. And then you get into the second game and to be able to calm himself down. I was impressed. I didn't think they could win without him and C.J. McCollum having huge numbers. Their defense was terrific. It wasn't the best basketball we saw.
But
they did what they had to do. You want to go in there and still
won. And they won ugly. They won ugly in the hardest place to win in the NBA all year, a team that all season long lost seven times at home.
If they went, if Denver goes into the series thinking, if we just stop Damian, we've got a chance, do you like them in this?
No, they got to play better. They got to make some shots. They got to get some different guys to step up for Denver Nuggets. I mean, they make six threes. They missed 10 free throws last night, and they out-rebounded. I mean, it was like a ridiculous number, like 69 to 70 rebounds they had. And when they were in 23 offensive rebounds and still was not able to score, they're going to have to figure it out. I don't know how hurt is Torrey Craig. He's big for them.
He got his nose broke.
Yeah, so
but
I don't know how efficient.
After.
Right, I don't know how efficient he can be with the series being short and not a lot of rest time. But I like the fact that Portland was able to get the game in there, now go home to their crowd where they play really good basketball. But I thought also, too, let's not forget, I thought Evan Turner was pretty good last night. I thought Zach Collins
and
was really good,
too. CJ in the fourth quarter. And if you I read some of the quotes after the game. I didn't see the press conference, but I read them in the game write-up this morning that CJ said, listen, Dame and I have sometimes it's spoken, sometimes it's unspoken communication about who's going to be the closer. And Dame could tell he didn't have it going. Mm-hmm. He could tell I did have it going to a greater degree. So in that fourth quarter, Dame only takes two shots. CJ takes seven, scores 8 points. But if I just said before the game that, to your point on the rebounding, Denver was going to have a plus 11 rebounding, but more jarringly, unbelievably, plus 16 offensive rebounding edge. They were going to get 23 offensive rebounds. Dame was going to make five shots and score less than 15 points, and they're going to lose to the Blazers in Denver. It's a really impressive, ugly win for Portland that now has home court in this series.
There are two times during the game that Dame was able to defer to CJ in the second quarter, where Portland was able to get a little margin. They were able to pull away from them a little bit. CJ was nice in that quarter. And then in the fourth quarter, where you see Dame took the back seat and was able to, this is a huge win for an organization because I've heard some experts pick Portland to the finals, ultimately against Golden State, who I believe would come out the other side. But, wow, what a franchise that came into, because we talked about them and OKC. Man, whoever loses this series, man, what a long offseason of doubting all the moves, doubting their personnel, and what do they have going forward. So Portland now with it 1-1, going back, not as tough as Denver.
Right.
But Portland is a tough place to play. It's going to be hard. Can Denver steal one there?
You can just kind of tell Portland's kind of demeanor. Last year getting swept by New Orleans, coming back a lot more focused the way they play against OKC. Mm-hmm. And then going in there last night, I know it's only the second game, but to get that win, they couldn't win that a couple years ago. And this is a different team now. That backcourt is much, much better than we expect now.
All right, Antoine, stick around. Lot to talk to you about. Coming up, has Kevin Durant cemented himself as the best in the world? That's next on First Things First. This one's your destination for the day's best sports shows. Tune in for the biggest personality on the biggest stories. We get you started right here with First Things First. Catch it all Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern, only on FS1.
That Dusty got me started today. Got me mad.
Always does. Back here with Antoine Walker talking Kevin Durant. Antoine, the reigning two-time finals MVP, is having himself quite a postseason, averaging 34 points, 5 boards, 5 assists through 8 games. And he's enjoying every last second of it. Durant says, quote, "This is where this expletive is fun. This is when it's serious and I'm just embracing it. I'm just having so much fun right now. This time of year is what I'm geared for. I'm just hooping at a high level and enjoying the competitiveness of the playoffs. You go through such a long season to get to this point, and now it's time to produce." Antoine, is Durant proving he is the best player in the NBA with the way his postseason has been so far?
He's had an unbelievable postseason, one of his better ones, but I'm not ready to give that title to him just yet. I think LeBron James still is the best player in the league. I think we're forgetting sometimes because we've
seen
him.
That's why Nick had Joe Brady.
No, that's not true.
I truly believe that. I think, you know, I think by him not being in the playoffs, the focus is on Kevin Durant. He's obviously had some great performances, but he played against the Clippers. They had Patrick Beverley guarding him. Not to take away from his performance, but you got somebody 6 feet guarding. You're supposed to get
30. You're supposed to go to work.
You're supposed to get 40. And he did what he's supposed to do. He said, I'm Kevin Durant. He put this to rest. Mm-hmm. And obviously, Doc stayed with that small lineup too long guarding him. But he did what he's supposed to do in the first round. And obviously, this series, he's been okay. He hasn't been the same as he was the first series. Game two, I thought, you know, they guarded him a little bit better with the switches, with Clint Capela and them challenging, getting some bigger guys on him. But to say he's the best player in the NBA, I'm not ready to give that title to him. I still believe it's LeBron James. You look at LeBron James' body of work, was playing great before he got hurt, missed 18 games to still come back and still put up the numbers he had. They were just too hurt this year to give LeBron James a legitimate grade when you think about all the injuries that they had as a team.
Listen, I agree that LeBron's the best basketball player alive right now, but let's take LeBron out of it. Let's just say, is he the best player of the guys in the playoffs? Because to CeCe's point, and this is fair, it's totally legit, this is an award that, an unofficial award, that is almost always determined by not just what you do in the regular season, but mostly how you do in the postseason. It's why Russell Westbrook, even his MVP year, wasn't really eligible for it. Nobody was saying he's the best player alive because his team was bounced in the first round of the postseason. So I think it is LeBron's title, but take him out of it. So we're talking Giannis, we're talking Harden, we're talking Durant, we're talking Steph. And two of those guys are not like the others in that two of them play together. And that's what makes it so hard for me, is the opposition is not declaring Kevin Durant the best player in the world. He hasn't been doubled at all in either series. The opposition is still gearing their game plan defensively around making sure Steph doesn't get off. And when we look at the totality of KD and Steph together, what we know is when KD's out there without Steph Curry, the Warriors win 60% of their games. But when Steph's out there without KD, the Warriors win nearly 90% of their games. So,
but the question wasn't who's the best player on the Warriors, who's more important on the Warriors. The question is, who's the best player right now?
Right.
And with Steph's ball handling, it's not fair to be able to compare him. And he's been in the whole organization. And his impact on the offense, it's felt more when he's gone. Because Kevin is not going to bring the ball up.
Well, I guess that's a really interesting point, that all the other players are affected more negatively when Steph's out than when KD's
Absolutely.
Out. Because he has been there the whole time. I think that's a really good point, and it should be baked into it. I also think it's almost impossible, then, to be the best player in the league if you might not be the most important guy on your own team.
I think we got to look at what Kevin Durant is. Kevin Durant probably, well, he is, that's because he's 7 feet. He's the best scorer we have in the NBA.
Yes.
That's like no question. He's the best scorer. And he's worked very hard to become a better defensive player. But when you start talking about the best, he couldn't do what LeBron did last year with that Cleveland Cavaliers team. He wouldn't be able to get to the finals
by himself. Could he do what Harden did this year? Could he do what Harden did last year? Could he take a team where it is – and that is why I'm so excited.
So you think Harden's a better basketball player than Kevin Durant?
I don't think Harden's a better basketball player, but I think Harden can do some things that KD can't do and vice versa. I think that Kevin Durant is far better suited to help the Warriors than Harden would be, but I also think Harden is far better suited to be the solo offensive force on a team.
So the only –
Because Harden can score while also being top three in the league in assists, because Harden can score while also getting guys open three-pointers.
So is the only way we can legitimately answer this question is if we see Kevin Durant on another team next year, not name the Warriors?
Based on what they're talking about, I don't think Kevin Durant's going to ever be able to do anything in Golden State to be able to be the best player in the world.
Chris,
right now we're watching the –
Yeah, you're right. But look, you got Steph Curry spotting up. You got Klay Thompson spotting up on one side.
I understand.
Draymond Green, who can make plays.
No, I understand.
It's hard to judge
it. Judge it however you want to. But when you watch basketball players, you watch guys who are hooping right now. If Kevin Durant is not the best basketball player in the world, who is? Kawhi Leonard? It's not Harden. It's not Steph. He's playing the best basketball.
I guess my question is, would it look like Kevin Durant's playing the best basketball? You didn't mention Giannis. If Kevin Durant and Giannis flipped, and it was Boston Celtics saying, our entire game plan is about stopping you, and how would Giannis look if he were playing where he never gets doubled?
Giannis still wouldn't be able to shoot, even if he was on Golden State.
Right, of course he wouldn't be able
to
shoot.
Like, in that transfer, that wouldn't happen.
Right, but you couldn't build a wall at the rim if he was on Golden State, because you're so worried about Steph and Klay.
I just don't know what Kevin Durant, what else he's got to do. Besides leave them, then everyone's
good. I think he should stay where he's at. This is where he's been
most effective. No, you have been consistent on that. I understand that.
He's fine where he's at. If I can play with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and make the most money that I could possibly make, I'm staying there and I'm winning championships.
And I like your argument saying it's just not fair to LeBron with all the injuries and everything else. I can hear that argument. Been like, listen, we're not going to award the best player this year. We're going to wait until LeBron's in the playoff. I can hear that argument, but I can't hear everyone going blind to what Kevin Durant's doing right now. So ultimately, it's like Kevin Durant can't do enough right now.
And that last part, I don't think I'm going blind. When we did on Wednesday the playoff rankings, the player rankings, I had Kevin Durant number one. But I don't know that he can do enough right now. You just recently, you're looking for a house, right? When anyone moves, there are positives and negatives to the decision. I'm going here. I love the acreage. I love the square footage. My commute's going to get a little bit worse, but it's worth it to me. When Kevin Durant made this move, he got a lot of positives. One of the negatives he and Steph Curry jointly sacrificed is we're not going to be top five MVP vote getters anymore. We're not going to really be in the discussion for who the best player alive is anymore because it's going to be so hard to judge. It's the only thing they gave up. Sometimes you give something up.
We're going to wait. We're going to wait till next year. And next year we're going to be Kevin Durant's going to be three-time MVP of NBA Finals. He'll have a new address, and we'll just start from there. We'll just start from scratch, all right? Because he'll be three-time. Bam, bam, bam. It's not his fault. He went to Golden State. LeBron picked the Lakers. He could have gone anywhere.
Sure.
Without question. But he didn't pick a team that won 73 games and a team that beat me 3-1.
No, I can understand that. Forget the regular season. I can understand
that. But Durant's the best player in the first round against the Clippers. And Draymond Green and Andre Iguodala have been the best two players in the second round.
In two games?
Yeah. That's the reason why they're up 2-0.
All right.
It's not because of Kevin Durant.
I see.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.